Osho. This, a thousand times this, the very essence of Zen. Talks given at the Osho Commune International, Pune, India. Discourse number 4.
Beloved Bhagwan, a monk said to Tozan, "Cold and heat descend upon us. How can we avoid them?" Tozan said, "Why don't you go where there is no cold or heat?" The monk said, "Where is the place where there is no cold or heat?" Tozan said, "When cold, let it be so cold that it kills you. When hot, let it be so hot that it kills you."
Manisha is the very space where I am trying you to reach, where there is no cold, no heat, where there is only aware. A silence that transcends duality, cold and heat, day and night, life and death, all that is dual is transcended when you are not in the mind, but at your very center, which neither feels cold nor feels hot, which only is a simple, pure space. Tozan is saying exactly the same what you are doing every day. A monk said to Tozan, "Cold and heat descend upon us. How can we avoid them?" It is a simple question. But has a great complexity in it. You have to take the word avoid, and you will see the complexity. That's what everybody is trying to do. How to avoid misery, agony? How to avoid pain? How to avoid life itself? That's what all the religions have been doing, avoiding. They call it renunciation. But it is nothing but a pure cowardly escape. So the very simple question is not so simple. In the very word avoid, all the religions of the world are reduced in a very obvious manner. Their whole effort has been of escaping from places, from people, from relationships, from the world to the mountains and to the forests. But they don't know, wherever you go, your mind is with you, and your mind is your world. You cannot renounce the so-called outside world without dropping the mind and being utterly silent. But that can be done anywhere. You don't have to go to the Himalayas. You have to go within world. No outward journey is going to help. You can renounce wealth, you can renounce kingdoms, you can renounce your wife, your husband, your children. You can renounce everything possible, but you are still there. You cannot renounce yourself, and you are the problem. Avoid is the word I am against, and any religion who teaches avoidance, I call it cowardly. Encounter reality, there is no point in avoiding. Encounter with intensity and totality, with awareness, and suddenly you will see you have reached a point within yourself where is no heat, no cold, where there is no love, no hate, where is no so-called life and no so-called death. Within you is the center of the universal. It is always here. You don't have to go to find it somewhere else. Every going is going away from yourself. You have to stop going away. You have to start sinking in. In Tozan's word, and he has expressed it with tremendous beauty and grandeur, and in the language of lines, Tozan said, "Why don't you go there? Where is no cold or heat?" The monk said, where is the place where there is no cold or heat? This is the misery that has happened always between the master and the disciple. The master is talking about the inner space and the disciple is hearing about some place somewhere outside. The master does not deal with places. He deals with spaces. Tozan said, when cold, let it be so cold that it kills you. And when hot, let it be so hot that it kills you. He is simply saying, be total in every situation, whether it is cold or hot. Be so total that your ego dies, that you are no more there. In another words, the moment you are total, you are not, but only a pure space. And that is your authentic reality. Secho's commentary, a helping hand, but still a thousand fathom cliff. So an hand, no arbitrary distinctions here. The ancient emerald palace shines in the bright moonlight. Clever Conroe climbs the steps and finds it empty. Few footnotes will be helpful to understand Secho's commentary. Conroe is a legend, tells of a clever, fast-running dog, Conroe, that chased a hare, both ran so fast that eventually they fell dead of exhaustion. The monk who asked the question in the present case is being compared to Conroe. Be so total that your very totality becomes a fire in itself and burns everything that is false, phony, and leaves only the ancient emerald palace shining in the full moon night. When Tozan was studying with Isan, he asked Isan about two Kukusi's sermons by sentient creatures. Isan said, sermons by insentient creatures are given here for us too, but few can hear them. Do you hear the bamboos? These are the sermons referred to. Sermons from insentient beings. Once you are silent, even roses start speaking to you. Do you see the loud speaking of the bamboos? Deeper your silence, louder you will be able to hear it. Tozan said, I am not yet certain about them. Would you please teach me? Isan said nothing but raised his stick straight up. Tozan said, I do not understand. Would you explain it to me? Isan said, I would never tell you about this with the mouth given to me by my parents. This was his way of teaching. This mouth given by our parents is not capable to say it. But the being is not given to you by our parents. You have come through them. They have been vehicles, but you are not part of them. Your body is made by your parents. The temple is raised by them. But the deity in the temple, the being, comes from eternity. It cannot come from mortal bodies. Isan then suggested that Tozan visit Ungan, who Tozan later succeeded. Coming up to Ungan, Tozan asked, who can hear the sermons of insentient creatures? Insentient creatures can hear them, answered Ungan. Why can I not hear them? Asked Tozan. Ungan raised his staff straight up and said, Do you hear? No, I don't, answered Tozan. Ungan said, don't you know, the sutra says, birds and trees all meditate on the Buddha and the Dharma. At this, Tozan suddenly became enlightened. He wrote the following verse. Wonderful, how wonderful! Sermons by insentient creatures, you fail if you listen with your ears. I repeat, you fail if you listen with your ears. Listening with your eyes, you hear them. By the eyes, he does not mean the ordinary eyes. He means the eyes of an awakening clarity of your being. If you can hear in your silence, if you can see in your silence, then everything in the world is speaking, giving sermons, singing songs, dancing. Can't you see what these eyes and these ears won't do? You will have to dig deep within yourself to find the right approach to see the eternal dance of existence, to hear the music and to see the beauty of it. Tozan continued practicing Zazen and ever watchful. One day, while he was swimming in a stream, he saw his shadow cast on the water and experienced his great enlightenment. His verse on that occasion was, long seeking it through others, I was far from reaching it. Now I go by myself, I meet it everywhere. It is just I myself. And I am not itself. Understanding this way, I can be as I am. Tozan has talked about two enlightenments. The second one he calls the greater enlightenment. The first enlightenment was hearing the sutra of Gautama Buddha, that insentient beings are not insentient. they are also living, loving. They are also singing, giving sermons. And he had become enlightened. This sutra pierced his very being, but he calls it just enlightenment. The great enlightenment happened when he saw his own shadow in the river, and suddenly became aware that wherever you go, to seek, to find the truth, you are going far away. Your being is with you, just like your shadow. You don't have to go anywhere. You have just to look in the mirror of your being. Naturally, he calls it greater enlightenment because it is no more concerned with anybody else. It is authentically his. Manisha has asked, "Beloved Bhagwan, I understand Tozan to be saying that nothing is to be avoided. On the contrary, to meet everything head on, and that totality is transcendence. Compared to Zen, other formal religions such as Christianity and Hinduism seem to be so childish in their understanding of life, with their gods and all the psychological paraphernalia that goes with God worship, and so insensitive to the subtle and the poetic. In fact, it seems as if either Zen is a religion and the others are not, or Zen belongs to a category all of its own. Would you please comment? There is no need of any comment. You are all experiencing Zen. It is not a religion in which you have to believe. It is an experience like love, which you have to live, which you have to experience. In other words, Zen is the most essential religion. Without anything unnecessary, just the core, the essential. You can call it religion, you can call it science, it does not matter. What name you give to it, in its pure simplicity, it is experiencing your own being. And the moment you experience your own being, you have experienced the being of this whole universe. Because your heart beats are part of the heartbeat of the universe. Just be silently aware and you are filled with Zen inside and out. It is not a formal religion like Christianity or Hinduism. It is a very individual, unique, a category of its own. It is only for the eccentric people. Only for the very intelligent. It is not for the mediocre, for the crowd. It is only for the individual who has the guts to stand up alone and listen to his own being without being bothered what others are saying, are believing, are worshipping. It is not an argument. It is not a belief. It is a pure experience, just like love or beauty or silence. It is anonymous. Before we enter into Zen, although you are already standing on the door steps of the temple, I would like you to have few laughs, because I want you to enter into the temple with laughing and dancing, joyous. Ronald Reagan is in hospital for a small operation, and Nancy Reagan is standing there watching every move the doctors make. One of the doctors approaches Reagan with his syringe. "What is that?" asked Nancy. "This is an anesthetic," replies the doctor. "After he gets this, he won't know a thing. Save your time, doc," snaps Nancy. "He does not know anything now." Fagin Finkelstein, the liar, is leaning back in his armchair in the new office he has just opened. The door cracks open and a man comes in. "Aha," thinks Fagin, "a client already. I must try and impress him." Fagin picks up the phone and starts talking. "No, I am extremely sorry. I am too much busy," he says into the phone. "I cannot possibly take your case. No, not even for $1,000. He sets down the phone and looks expectantly at the man who has just come in. "And now," says Fagin, "how can I help you?" "You can't," replies the man. "I just came in to connect your telephone." Pope the Polar is seriously ill, and Paddy, Seamus and Sean are drunk in the pub discussing who will be the new Pope. "I know who the next Pope will be," says Seamus. "It is going to be Cardinal Redzaff from Russia." "Rubbish," says Sam. "The next Pope will be Cardinal Chang from China." "It is going to be Redzaff from Russia," insists Seamus. "Not a chance," says Sun. "Cardinal Chang from China." "Redzaff," shouts Seamus. "Chang," shouts Sun. Paddy has been sitting quietly looking at his beer. "Neither of you know what you are talking about," he says. "The next Pope is going to be Rabbi Nussbaum from New York." "Don't be silly," snaps Seamus. "He is not even a Catholic." "Ah," says Paddy. "Well, I won't even argue with you if you are going to bring religion into it." The angel of death finds Rufus Rothschild and delivers him to the pearly gates. "Mr. Rothschild," says Saint Peter, looking at his files, "have you done any good in the world?" "Well," replies Rothschild, "one time I gave $1 to a poor man." "I see," says Saint Peter, writing something on his papers. "Anything else?" "Yes," replies Rothschild, thinking hard. "I once gave 50 cents to a blind man." "Were there any other virtuous acts in your life?" asks Saint Peter. "No," says Rothschild. "That is it." "Okay," says Saint Peter, turning to the angel, "give this guy his $1.50 back and tell him to go to hell." now we can be Nivedana, give the gong, and you start rubbish. Start. this, Nivedana, relax. Nivedana, come back.
Yes, Bhagwan.
Thank you.